Last week, the sports industry was rocked to its very foundations by the news of the untimely death of Kevin Roberts, the founding editor of Sport Business magazine. The eulogies have come in their torrent from all over the world because Kevin was quite simply one of the kindest, most respected and generous people in our industry. From all of us at Are You Not Entertained, we send our condolences to Kevin's family and friends at this sad time. And tonight, I will raise a glass to a very special friend of mine, who I knew for over 25 years, and whose spirit and warmth can never be replaced.
From the boardroom to the locker room, sport captures the imagination like little else. In this podcast, we talk to the men and women who make the big decisions and those who make the big plays to find out where sport is and, importantly, where it's going. But we do so through the only eyes that matter, those of the fan.
Welcome, everybody, to another edition of Are You Not Entertained? Joining me this week for our goal own goal is my friend, compadre, partner in crime, co-host, Roger Mitchell. Rog, how are you, mate?
I'm fine. How are you, Grant? I'm very fine.
Yes, I'm doing well. You've had some snow on the lake there this week, I believe.
Yeah, we've had a lot of snow and it was dreadful last night. I had to get to the airport and there was a dreadful accident. It was not Bing Crosby snow last night. It was fuck that snow last night.
Now, airport, you're not travelling, are you? You've got people coming in?
Yeah, I picked up my son coming back from London.
Ah, fabulous.
Yeah, lovely. Yeah.
So he's
back
for Christmas now, is he?
Yeah, he'll finish the last part of the term here. That's what they told him to do. And then he's back just after January.
Marvellous. Marvellous. Yeah. Well, mate, we've already tipped people's hands as to what's on the table here, goal on goal. So as is my proclivity, I'm going to let you go first. What have you got for this week?
Yeah. This one, you know, Grant, that we've talked a lot about things that are, you know, sport is entertainment, it's content, and we'll come back to that maybe later on. Sport's all data. Today, I'm going to go back to my roots a little bit and come to your side of the fence. Today, for me, my goal is all about the meaning of sport and what it does to you. My goal this week is the close-up of Carlo Ancelotti, watching the video of the memory of Diego Maradona before the game, mm-hmm. and the glazed eyes and the pensive look and the tears. That for me struck a chord that had a lot of empathy for Carlo. I mean, obviously I'm not in his position where he was remembering great battles on the field, playing against Diego, yep. living in an era where they were on the greatest football stage in the world, Serie A. They were the two great protagonists, the Milan team of Sacchi, and what Diego did with that team of also-rans. I could see, or I thought I saw him reflecting on 35 years as he kind of like his eyes glazed over. And I think it does the same for all of us, and I'd like your view on it as well. But, you know, my own story is a little bit of a parallel to what I think that moment reminded me of. I went to Italy in 86 after having lived all my life in Scotland, studied at university in Scotland, and my first 3 years working was as an accountant in Scotland. My mother is an Italian, so I guess I was a child of a protective mother. And in 86, I kind of said, to hell with all this, I'm just going to jump into the deep end. And I moved my whole life to Bologna in Italy. And you can imagine that experience, learning a new language, living on your own, Italian auditing, which was in itself fun. And of course, football, you know, football also playing for a local team there, where I realized that I was actually a better player than I'd always been considered in Scotland, because I was relatively technical and had a decent tactical brain. Although, you know, in Scotland, I didn't have the physique to do a lot of things there. So the whole Italian experience was an amazing avalanche for me. And of course, Sunday, because it was only Sunday then, it wasn't like now that, you know, you get football every day. Sunday, there was this amazing opera, that was taking place in a southern city underneath a volcano called Naples, where this stocky little guy was daring to challenge the might of Juventus, Platini's Juventus. And it was just everything that you can imagine, Grant. It was a story that it's actually quite emotional thinking back on it, because it's been so pleasing for me to see so many of the people realize what Diego was. You know, there's all this thing for the last few years about who's the GOAT, and surely you can't compare Maradona to Messi, and the stats don't add up and everything. And all of us from our generation, Grant, I think we all felt that that wasn't a fair reflection. And I think what we've seen in the last week or 10 days now is a realization that this guy was something very, very special. I've spoken, and then I'd like to hear your view. I've spoken to a few people, one of which was our ex-guest, Ray Ranson, an international footballer himself in Man City. And he called me and he said, this is a few days ago now, he said, you know, I played against Diego. And I said, did you, Ray? And I just said, whatever you were calling for, just tell me this story first. He says, it's a pre-season friendly at the Nou Camp, Man City against Diego. Diego was in his prime. I think we're talking 82. In his prime, before the injuries and before. And Ray Ranson was captain of England under 21s. He was a serious player. He said, I never saw anything like it. He said, I was nutmegged about 10 times. He said, I felt like at some point just stopping and just clapping him. And then he told the story at the end that in the last 5 minutes of the game, all his teammates were trying to position themselves
to get his shirt,
yeah. You know, to be near him when the final whistle went.
And, I love it.
You know, what I think I'm trying to say, Grant, is that moment for me, it was more about judging him as whether he's the best, the second best, the third best or whatever. It's more about remembering the magnificent opera, which it was, when you throw in Naples, you throw in the mafia, the Camorra, you throw in, you know, the drugs. That whole story is an amazing story. It's more than that. It's for what I think a lot of us believe about sport. It is a timeline for your life. And for me, 1986, 86-7 season that ended in the first Scudetto for Naples was a watershed moment in my life. And so when I saw Ancelotti there, the close-up, and the tears, it was a bit much.
Yeah, no, it's beautifully put, Roger, I have to say. I'm just sitting here listening to you, just laughing up every word. It's been fascinating to watch all the comparisons and the eulogies and all the stuff that's come out this week. What tends to happen when a sporting great dies is, for that moment, people come out and, oh no, he was the best ever. You know, it'll be when Pelé sadly leaves us, which will happen inevitably at some point, we're going to see the same thing. But of course, the difference there being the footage that we have to remember Pelé by is massively inferior to that which we have of Diego Maradona. And Messi is going to take that available footage to a whole different level. You imagine the analysis in hopefully 50-odd years, 60-odd years, 70-odd years, at the end of Messi's life, what they're going to be able to show you of his skills and his ability. But, you know, I have to agree with you, Roger. I think, you know, watching this stuff this last week or so with Maradona, and obviously he was going to feature heavily in the goal on goal this week. He was a beautiful footballer to watch. He skated above everybody else that was trying to take his legs out, and often being very successful. And he got up and he shrugged it off. And he destroyed teams on his own in an age where he had zero protection from referees.
Zero.
He had, some of the pitches they played on were not quite as bad as those ones we saw in the 70s, but they weren't an awful lot better. And you know what? What's been interesting this last week, and you touched upon it a little bit there, the number of players who played against him who have come out and said, I had to stop myself applauding.
Yeah.
Particularly that second goal against England in 86 in the quarterfinal in Mexico. Peter Reid said it, Lineker said it. He went past Peter Reid, I think twice. He went past Peter Reid in scoring that goal. And his instinct was to applaud what he'd just seen. And that, for me, was so resonant, because at the end of the day, it doesn't matter if you're Peter Reid or Carlo Ancelotti or Gary Lineker or anybody, you are a sports fan. And that's a big part of what this podcast is about.
Yes, indeed.
And so you can't help yourself but appreciate, as a fan of sport, what you've just seen. Whether it's done it to you or not, it's that's not your first instinct. It's not embarrassment. It's not upset. It's wow. Because first and foremost, you're a sports fan, and then you're a player, and then you're an England international. And so, it's been great to see all the tributes this week, and all of them well deserved. And yes, that we all know the personal struggles he went through. They've been chronicled as much, if not more, sadly, than his exploits on the football field. But he was a human being, and. Just seeing him, that the clip that went around, I mean, I must have had it 20 times this week, of him warming up, just playing with the football, juggling the ball to Life is Life. It's pure joy. It's pure joy. And when you watch that warm-up routine, Lineker was on one of the Champions League games. Obviously, he died on a Champions League night. And they were asking Gary about it. And he said that the most amazing thing he's ever seen in a football field wasn't Maradona's goal. It wasn't any of that stuff. He said, he was watching him warm up, doing that same routine, juggling the ball. And he said he would get to a point where he would thump the ball up in the air, 150 feet. And he'd do a couple of whatever spins. He did it 5 times, 6 times, 7 times, 8 times in a row on the volley, never had to move more than 3 feet from where he was standing when it came down again. And it was Lineker and Ferdinand and I forget who else. And when you think of all the things Maradona's done, when you think of all the great goals he scored, the titles he's won, the moments in that career, the look on these guys' faces when Lineker described what he was doing there, just thumping the ball as hard as he could up in the air and it coming down, 7 or 8 times in a row, more or less on the same spot. Their faces were just, that's impossible. And I think to many people, football fans especially, Maradona was impossible. Yeah. He did things that you just think, what did I just see? I mean, that goal, I remember that goal so vividly. I remember, shouting, get him, tackle him, stop him, do something. And it was only when I saw the replay, I realized what he'd done. It was just tackle him, come on, tackle him, come tackle him. And then the goal was in the back of the net. And then you see the replay and you're just like, holy cow. I mean, that was just sublime. So it's a very sad thing, I think, for any sports fan, particularly football fans, particularly Argentines, particularly Neapolitans. It was a great tragedy. But what a wonderful 10 days we've had of celebrating, remembering the skills he had, the things he did, and the life he lived, because he was a remarkable human being.
Yeah, thank you for that, Grant. The thing I liked a lot was, he kind of like broke on the scene in 1978, and actually at Hampden against Scotland. I think then he played England a year later at Wembley. And everybody that was at those games, including the players, will never ever forget it. It's as you say, it was this is something we don't know. We've not seen this before. And he was a teenager. Yeah. And Ray was telling me about Kenny Sansom that played in the England game. And he said, I just can't believe it. So, you think back on all of that And then, you know, you see, don't want to end it in a sour note, but it just shows you, you know, the Spanish league fined Leo Messi for putting on the Newell's Old Boy strip. That yep. is, you know, what are you thinking? You know, I mean, it's ridiculous, €600 it was. I mean, who comes up with a decision that, first of all, you want to do that, and secondly, for a sum that doesn't make any sense or meaning or in any way, where you've got, you know, the natural heir of Diego putting on the shirt that is their common link, because Diego played for that, for yep. Old Boys for a couple of days or something, and Messi, it was his first team. That's my goal of the week.
It's that difference, right? It's that difference between people who live and breathe sport and people whose job it is to do something in sport. And they'll never understand. You know, whoever made that decision is simply just a suit. He's not a sports fan, because any sports fan would appreciate that, understood what had happened, and there's absolutely no way you would post, no matter what the rules say. You'd fight hard against anyone who suggested it. And that's, it's ridiculous. You just make yourself a laughing. It doesn't make any difference to anybody, least of all Messi. But you just make yourself a laughing stock and expose yourself for what you are, sadly.
Yeah.
Well, I'll do a quick own goal here, Roger. In fact, for me, this is a goal. I just think this is wonderful. You know, we've had in the UK this week, we've had some fans allowed back into the games, which is great. You know, I saw clips of the Arsenal game on Thursday night. Sorry, Arsenal, you're playing Thursday nights. you know, there's fans in the stand, which is great, and they're singing and they're chanting, and it's okay. It's not the same experience, but it's so good to have them back. But I read a piece in one of the papers. I was looking for it. I can't find the damn thing because I think I read it in a different report of something. Talking about Charlton Athletic, our boy Kelvin's, I guess, ex-team. I think Wednesday night, because they moved all the fixtures back to Wednesday because that's when this new rule came in place. And this is the most football fan thing I've ever heard happen, Rog. So they're in. They've been shut out of football grounds for what? Since March, I guess? So what are we talking? Yeah, we're talking 8 months of no football. Yeah. And bear in mind, given the short break, it's apart from those early weeks, it's been constant football. So you've been sitting there watching game after game after game, champing at the bit to get back in the ground. You have to go through a lottery to get a ticket to get in the ground. And apparently there was a fan who left the Charlton game early because he was so disgusted at what he saw on the pitch, which I just thought was the most football fan thing I've ever heard in my life. You can just imagine, can't you?
So fickle.
It's like your guy, right? About the guy who was ill who came on the year. What's he?
He's been just stealing a wage for a year.
But it was just fantastic. Just imagine it, right? When you're sitting there, you go, I've had enough of this. I'm off. Which is just fantastic. Absolutely fantastic.
That's a great one.
But look, I think for me, my goal of the week
Before you go on the goal.
Go on.
I want to put a little appendix onto that one there, because I know you'll like it. Moral hazards in football.
Is that Eden's brother?
Well, actually, the way these guys could be played better than Eden Hazard these days. Moral Hazard. He does have a brother, but I don't know. I can't remember his name.
It wasn't Hazard. Mickey. That much I know. It definitely wasn't Mickey.
No, he was a good player.
Duke, maybe?
No, listen. Moral Hazard. Moral Hazard, you as a finance guy, you know what that means.
I'm intimately aware with it, yes.
Right. This is where I'm going with this. There was announced this week the bailout from the Premiership to the English Football League. I don't know whether you caught that story or not, Grant.
No, go on.
It's complex, and I don't want to bore the listeners. That is basically they are providing a guarantee for these clubs to get loans against. It's not necessarily, you know, money free and anything like that. It's relatively complex, but the point is that it's for people that haven't paid their tax arrears. So the point being, and many clubs came out and said this, saying, we won't get this because we've been good stewards of our club and our sport, and we've paid taxes when they come due. And guess what? We are not going to be recipients of the bailout.
Yeah.
And of course, that's moral hazard. And you know, I just, as a small adjunct to what you're saying, it's the kind of world we live in these days. Anybody that kind of like looks after their finances and puts things away and makes sure everybody's getting paid and budgets well, you just seem to get no breaks at all.
No, it's very true, Rog. It's very true. What happens now, you get the feeling that we're close to some sort of tipping point in exactly what you just described there, but who knows? Who knows? It's a strange world in which we live, my friend.
Yeah. Your goal?
So, my goal this week was the remarkable, and I mean remarkable, escape of Romain Grosjean in the Grand Prix last week. I mean, absolutely terrifying crash, the kind that we got used to seeing in the 70s, and driver after driver didn't emerge from those cars. And, to see him walk away from that, and more impressively, to see the job that the Halo did.
Halo,
this thing
amazing.
That everyone's been complaining about, and because it spoils their view of the racing, or all the sort of stuff we've seen thrown at it. That piece of innovation saved a man's life. No two ways about it.
No two ways.
And saved him from a horrible death. And he's got some burns and a broken rib, but he's absolutely fine. And he'll be racing again if he's brave enough to get back in the car, which I wouldn't be, but he'll be racing again soon. So I think this idea of safety, and this folds into the debate we've been having about head in the football, right? This idea about safety in sport. And, producer James and I were chatting this week, and he wants us to do a special on safety in sport, which I think might be a good idea. So we'll have to think about that. But to see him walk away from that was just absolutely astonishing, Roger.
Yeah, it was. I was going to mention this incident probably at the tail end of what was going to be one of my comments this week, which is Formula One in general, which I think you're right. I think they're getting so many things correct. Formula One, I think is coming into what could be a golden moment. And I'll tell you why. Let's take the news this week. Once we've recorded this, I'll go and watch the qualifying, where you've got the young lad Russell, who's been plucked from Williams to take the Mercedes seat, and yesterday at practice finished first. Poor Bottas must be really uncomfortable at this moment. Young man, Grosjean's replacement name escapes me, but the grandson of Emerson Fittipaldi, also called Fittipaldi, another young man.
Is his name Emma grandson Fittipaldi by any chance?
That's terrible. Right, so you've got these beautiful things like, the links to the past. You've got a Schumacher coming back onto the grid next year. And this is why I think we're about to have a wonderful next 2 or 3 years for Formula One. It's very clear to me that it's becoming a very young sport. These young kids are dynamic. They've got things to say. They look good. They hit the Gen Z zeitgeist. Formula One still remains one of the only sports properties that you can get a global exposure and market with one buy, with one investment, if you will. And then you've got what I think has been underestimated, which is the effects of all these budget cuts. I had means this week to speak to somebody from Williams who have just been bought by big private equity firm. And it's going to level up the field amazingly. And, if anybody out there is a little bit of a gambler, have a little bet on Williams and the number of podiums they get in the next 3 years. And I would take the over on 10. I think Williams are coming back huge. Now, whether they manage to keep Russell or not, I don't know, because he's obviously part of that Mercedes Academy program. And, you know, I would tend to think, especially if he has a good race tomorrow, that Bottas might not be around much longer. But the point being is that I think Formula One, Drive to Survive, Gen Z, there's a couple of content plays I see out there in Formula One that I do some work with that are super exciting about how you can build on these young people's personalities and follow them in their lives as 20-year-olds. And I honestly think that this property is going to tick all the boxes for storytelling, narrative, new audiences, tech, and uncertainty of result.
See, this is really weird, Rog, because I couldn't agree with you more. However, what I find remarkable is, let's face it, just how boring Formula One is at the moment. Right? I agree with every single word you said. I think it is in a golden age. I think all this stuff is right. But I've noticed, when you watch these Grand Prix, you basically don't see Lewis Hamilton, right? You're watching the TV coverage, they just barely show him, because what's the point? He's out in front, he's winning. He comes into pit, you'll see him. If there's a problem, you'll see him. But all the coverage is of the battle for third and fourth, or the battle for sixth and seventh, and all the excitement is going on back down the field. So you've got this product that has really found the sweet spot. And I think that Drive to Survive thing on Netflix that we've discussed at length on this show many times before was kind of the skeleton key for that. But at the same time, the actual race itself, it's a Hamilton victory, an easy Hamilton victory, unless there's a problem. Maybe Bottas squeaks one now and again, maybe Verstappen sneaks in. But so I'm torn by this dichotomy of a gold. I get it. We'll have to wait and see, because at the moment, and George Russell has just proven that with that pole position, if you've got the best car, you win, right? I mean, if we could measure how close these drivers are to each other, I think there's as one of my mates would say, there's not a Rizzler between them. So it's fascinating to me, because I've enjoyed watching the Formula One this year, but not because of who's winning the race. I mean, it's just you barely even bother looking at that. It's the little individual battles. It's seeing the young kids. So I think there's some kind of magic formula here, Rog, and it comes back to this idea of storytelling. You know, where we talked about the Wrexham stuff. This ability to tell a story and capture a narrative. If you are not a diehard fan of Wrexham, relegation probably doesn't mean anything to you, right? If they get relegated, if they get promoted, as long as you get to the Premier League, then you're going to be playing against all these big teams. But if you're a casual fan of Wrexham and they're playing Scunthorpe or Darlington in League 3 or League 2, it doesn't matter to you. So it's funny what all this money being thrown at creating narrative-based entertainment around sports is doing. It's making the results less and less important. And I do wonder what that means in the future. If the results become less and less important, what players do you sign? Do you sign players that are going to make you win, or do you sign the players who've got the biggest Twitter followings, right? I don't know.
No, it's very interesting where we are.
We have. You're right. You're absolutely right. But they won everything as well.
Yeah, well, listen, let me come back to that, because I think that's so interesting, and there's something else that links to that. You know, you're right, uncertainty of result is hugely important, and that's my point. You know, having spoken to some people in the teams and realising how much the big boys are having to downsize and cut people and rework in a different way, and the smaller teams, like Williams say, that I've got new money now, are going to be able to go in the opposite direction. I honestly think you're going to get, you know, a complete uncertainty of result. And when you link it to everything else I said about the profile of young kids, these young kids being of the Gen Z generation that want to create content, they want to engage with super fans, you know, niche content marketing, interaction. I just see it all. For me, it's just, I can see it. It's going to be something very, very important. And Liberty, I think they came in and they thought it was easier than it was going to be. They talked about how much sponsorship they were going to manage to get extra, and they struggled a little bit. But I think that was just, you know, it'll be looked back as teething problems. And I think we will see Formula One in 3 years' time being one of the great and maybe few sports global properties left.
Yeah, I don't disagree. I really don't. I think it is going to be very interesting to watch. So, but I, you know, the point about the future of who your drivers are, who your players are, it does interest me, Rog, because I think that there is a clear path to building a team, not necessarily to win, but out of the biggest personalities you can find, who have the biggest followings, who can bring you the most looks, who can, you know, generate the most.
That's true. But
it doesn't have to be Galacticos. They don't have to be stars because of their skill level, right? They can be bad boys. They can be, you know, guys with a checkered past, all this sort of stuff. And the purity of it, of trying to build a team to win, trying to put a team together to win something.
This is the big debate.
I don't know which way it goes, but I can. You can see we're at one of those forks in the road, right? And as Robert Frost just said, you know, will you take the road less travelled? I don't know. Do we keep the purity of sport, or do we focus on the commercial properties of it? And I know what I fear happens, and I know what I hope happens, and they're sadly the two different forks in the road.
Well, as we keep saying, I am actually more optimistic because I think the tech will allow people to see the sport that they want to see. And I'll make that point a little bit by referring to, you know, the Tyson card, the Mike Tyson card this week. You know, you've got two ex-boxers fighting, records or much higher than expected pay-per-view subscribers. You know, so what's that telling you? You're not watching these boxers because they're the top of the tree anymore. And more interestingly, on the undercard, you've got Jake Paul, the brother of Logan Paul, who set all those records with KSI. Jake Paul's another YouTuber, against an ex-NBA star, Nate Robinson.
Yeah.
Now, I don't expect you to have watched either of those fights, Grant.
I'm more of a Billy Paul man myself, if I'm honest.
Tyson did fine. You know, he looked fine. He probably should have won it, and they gave it a draw. But I'll focus more on the other one, which was a two-round knockout, actually quite a brutal, devastating knockout by Jake Paul of the ex-NBA Nate Robinson. And here's my point. You say, who cares? You know, nobody's interested in relegation. Nobody's interested in the result. If anybody listening Googles Nate Robinson memes or the Nate Robinson challenge as a hashtag, you will see a level of engagement and interaction with a certain younger audience that will blow your socks off. And, you know, it's not just slag off stuff. It's creative. You know, okay, it's not great for Nate Robinson. I don't know how he comes back from the Nate Robinson challenge where his him laying flat out, knocked out on the canvas is put into a whole lot of creative memes, one more humiliating for him than the other. But the fact is that it got amazing response and amazing engagement. And, you know, let's just throw in there as well that the commentary was by Snoop Dogg, that was considered incredibly fresh and incredibly relevant for the type of spectacle that we saw. So my point, Grant, is that, you know, with technology now being able to put in different streams, different feeds with different commentaries and segment an audience and all of that, I think there's going to be room for everything. woe betide any sport that says they don't need to go at least a little bit in the new direction. And the skill will be in finding the balance where you can hit all your audiences without alienating any of them. And as I say, I think Formula One look to me to be the ones that maybe have got the best chance of hitting that spot.
All right. This is fascinating. Now, I'm very curious here, Rog, because at the beginning of that, you talked about how optimistic you were. And then you went on basically to make my point for me better than I ever could, far more eloquently in terms of what I'm worried about. So let me unpack that. You've got Tyson and Roy Jones, right? Both great fighters. Both great fighters.
Great fighters.
In their prime. They're now in their mid-50s. From what I read, Tyson battered Jones and should have won it quite easily. But it was a draw, right? Why was it a draw? Well, because of a rematch, obviously, right? I'm sure it was probably agreed beforehand that it would be a draw. So you're talking about being optimistic. I'm talking about the purity of sport being tossed aside for commercial.
But that wasn't sport. That's entertainment, Grant. That whole card was entertainment.
Fine. But still, and then you're talking about Jake Paul and Nate Robinson, and when we talk about storytelling, we talk about narrative, Rog.
Yep.
What's going to get more views, right? You just talked about the views on this stuff, and it sounds like tapping into these memes is the way to get views. Is the way you're talking about the engagement levels off the charts. So
that's where these young audiences.
But what do we think is going to happen to this? I accept it absolutely. My point is, what do we think happens with this? What do we think as more and more clubs are bought by private equity firms that whose real interest is commercial, is how much money can we make out of this? Where do you think this is going? Because to me, it's obvious that the sport/entertainment line gets moved where sport is on the left hand of it, the line is there, and 90% of the right side of the thing is entertainment. And you lose that purity of sport. You lose the purity of competition. I mean, Nate Robinson and Logan Paul, is that competition? Jones Jr. and Mike Tyson, was it competition? I mean, I'm sure it was, they weren't trying not to hurt each other, but I guarantee you they weren't trying to kill each other. They weren't, this wasn't prime time
hard.
Mike Tyson.
He took a fat L. Nate Robinson, he went down hard.
But he's a basketball player, Rog. It's not that he was battered by a top flight boxer. He's an inadequate boxer who was out of his depth and he paid the price. And the entertainment has been, sadly, in a guy who's out of his depth, who's a name and has a following, getting splattered because of the memes it creates. So what do you think happens now? Find me some more NBA guys who can't really box.
Conor McGregor, Jake Paul is the next fight.
Right, yeah, exactly right. I mean, what a farce. But of course, the more these things happen and the more likes they get and the more hits they get, the more people are going to come up with more creative things, and you're just going to cheapen sport. You're going to cheapen competition. You're going to hasten the time when great champions move over to become great entertainers, because the prime of their career, why bother, right? Why bother fighting guys in the ring who could really damage you? Why not take a break for a couple of years and come back still in pretty good shape and make 10 times the money for staged nonsense? I get it. I totally get it. But for me, as a sports purist and a fan of competition and trying to win at something, I think what's happening, what I see happening in front of me, Rog, is something that I'm absolutely not optimistic about in any way, shape or form in terms of what it can do for sport. If you're looking to make money from it, you should be incredibly optimistic.
Well, listen, I think there's an element of semantics in this, and you're right, at the extremes, like in anything in life, there's no good results. But what I'm saying is this. In the past, sport was about the event, and then you waited another week or another 2 weeks or another year even, in the case of something like Wimbledon, for it to happen again. What I'm talking about now is creating much more around the personality of the athlete. And sport needs to grasp this. The athlete is now front and center and where all the juice is. So what I'm talking about, taking Formula One as an example, Do you want to know more about Grosjean? No? Would you like to understand a little bit more how he went back home and he spoke to his girlfriend or his boyfriend, whatever it is, and do you want to see what his favourite dish is when he has a Grand Prix in Bahrain and things like that? What I'm saying is I see it as additive to creating what we saw in these documentaries like Drive to Survive, where you get the backstory, you understand it a little bit. You know that guy at Red Bull, the English-Malaysian guy, the backstory there is very interesting. So I get it at the extreme, your point. It's worrying, it's not great. At the other extreme where, you know, you get pure sport and not changing and ending up with an audience of 60 plus years old, that's not great either. What I'm saying as an optimist is that I think with smart people who can retain the meaning, that's where we started this goal on goal, the meaning, together with understanding that in this world today, you have got to be engaging the younger audience with narrative storytelling and memes. I think it's possible. Will it always be done correctly? No. But is there talent out there that can do it? Is there tech out there that can do it, Grant? Yes, there is. So, I hear what you're saying and your vision, the way that you fear it, is not a good one. I agree with that. I just don't think it'll end up that way. I think it'll end up in the middle part of the bell curve, where we will find much more interesting stories about athletes. And I repeat, athletes is where the action is. You saw this week Ibra complaining about EA Sports, saying, why are you using my image like that? Who gave you permission? We're going to get more and more of this. So sport needs to embrace the athlete, not use their image without permission. Learn more about them and try and create these story arcs. I know it doesn't sound like sport. Story arc and sport doesn't sound the same, but that's how the kids roll, Grant. It really is.
No, Roger, again, no, I get it. I get it. I'm not talking about a vision I can't see. I'm talking about a vision that worries me in terms of where I see it ultimately ending up. Because ultimately, if it is all about money and these clubs are all going to be bought by private equity firms and run like businesses, then I know that world and I know how those decisions get made and I know what ultimately will sway any decision that's getting made. And if you're running one of those things like a business and you've got investors who aren't necessarily sports fans, just look at the numbers and want a return, and you're offered the chance to build a potential title-winning team with a bunch of boring nobody footballers, you're not going to do it. You're going to look at the numbers. You're going to crunch the data, use all this technology, use all this AI, and they're going to go, no, this guy's not a good footballer, but his Twitter presence is huge.
I hear you.
And that's what I fear. But look, hey, we'll on the plus side, look, maybe there's a resurgence in amateur sport. It'll be interesting to see amateur sport starting to get covered, right? I mean, Sunday League football would be a fantastic thing to show because now there you would find some real unlikely heroes, right? I mean, if you had a weekly Sunday League show from playing fields across England, it would be hysterical. Now, there's a reality TV idea I can get behind.
Yeah, you're right. And listen, you know, Hollywood versus art house. What you just described there is the polarization that will exactly happen. We won't repeat it. We say it often. But you know, that's how it's going to go. And you know, you see the NFL in the middle of media recessions, cut the cord, probably going to double their media values because it remains one of the very few things that can bring together a sizable audience. That's Hollywood. Formula One will be Hollywood. The Premiership will be Hollywood. Champions League. Everything else needs to change its model. And goddamn, you better embrace storytelling. Hold your nose if you need to. If you don't like it, hold your nose because you don't have a lot of options. If you can't get your niche audience, because that's what it will be, your niche audience engaged around a dialogue about their passion, And for young kids, that's around memes, you're dead. So you've got no real choice, Grant.
Yeah, no, I hear. Listen, as long as nobody suggests that Ian Dowie play me in Are You Not Entertained the Movie, I don't care. That's the only thing that I'm worried about at this point.
What else you got for us, Reg?
Yeah, I'm going to end this show closing with Serie A again to kind of like close the circle on Diego. I noticed this week Rocco Comiso, who's an Italo-Americano, who made a fortune in America through cable TV. I think his company is Mediacom. He bought Fiorentina Football Club, the team of Florence, about 18 months ago, around that time. And like anybody who is buying a team in Italy, especially in one of the great tourist cities, your thinking is around a kind of like sports tourism play and a destination, and the destination obviously being a modern stadium. And he comes out this week and he says, look, you know, we've put a lot of effort into this, and I'm not sure we're going to be able to get it through the political quagmire, which is Italian politics. And you'll know, Grant, yeah, this will chime very much with Jim Palotta in Rome, that I think for 5 years talked about the stadium announcement, yes, announcement, no, different levels of politicians, new people getting voted in and voted out, back to square one. And the reality is the stadium issue and them being owned by the local governments, the local councils, has been, in my opinion, the main factor in the decline of Serie A from the time of Diego, when it was by a country mile the greatest stage in the world for football, to today, where even before COVID, you had dreadful television products of half-filled stadia, camera positions that were wrong, grounds with a running track, a shambles of not fit for purpose. So when you've got a new guy coming in full of the joys of investing in the football team of one of the great cities in the world, Florence, and 1 year later he's already starting to say, well, you know, I'm not sure I'm going to make it. It's almost the travails of Italian football in a nutshell.
But what is it, Roger? Is it just corruption? Is it pure and simple corruption that stops this stuff happening?
No, I mean, like, I just think it's a small man theory of small town politicians who own the current asset, which is the stadium, and they make all kinds of demands for anybody wanting to build a new stadium. They talk about renovating the old one, doing it in partnership with the council, all things that, what I would say, maintain their hold over the enjoyment of their citizens, which, as we know, happens mainly in a stadium. I believe they hate the fact that it's just a private enterprise that doesn't need to talk about politics at all, or invite the local politician into the royal box, because you need to keep them on side. I just think they're scared that they will just be cut out of the picture.
Scared? Well, yeah. I mean, scared or cut out of the picture and cut out of the proceeds.
Well, listen, you know, there's greasing palms all around real estate projects in every part of the world, especially when politics are involved. I think it's more, Grant, that they, you know, anybody that's lived in Italy, and, you know, Diggle, your mate, will have told you this, politics is everywhere.
Yeah.
You know, people don't appear on TV unless they've been close to a politician or the Vatican or somebody important. Any time that there's tenders for, you know, let's say something like the tourism ministry and doing a new content strategy, it never gets done well, because it's always the friend of the friend of the friend. Italy very much is the country of who you know and what not what you know. So when you get, you know, the opposite of that, which is can-do Americans, you know, who self-made men like Comiso, who come in and say, well, I've got a plan. I'm going to spend a shitload of money, which you should be happy about, and bring a whole lot of jobs and new activity into a city. And I'm going to make this team the way it should be again. And I'm going to link it to sports tourism and attract the whole family. And then you've got some Jobsworth saying, well, actually, no. It's soul destroying. And I think, you know, one day we'll get Jim Pallotta on this podcast. I think he would say the same, Grant. It's utterly soul destroying. And they've paid the price with 30 years of decline.
Well, okay, but let me ask you this, Rog, because I listened to that, and these small towns and small town politicians, your point is absolutely right, that the football team and the stadium is 9 times out of 10 the focal point of that community. And these local politicians are locals, right? And so what I don't understand, or I guess I do, is you would imagine that that team and that game is in their soul from when they were little kids, and yet they get to a point where they're faced with a choice of doing something which will furnish the football club or saying no to it because it reduces their ability to make money, and there's a little hesitation.
Well, for me, that's normal. You know, what's that phrase? I can't remember who said it. Absolute power corrupts absolutely. Right. And I think if I take your line that one day they were a young kid that loved watching their football team, I think them being in inverted commas power in the local community, in the local council, the local government, I think it's robbed them of all of that. I think their soul's dead, you know? And I think that's the issue with politics everywhere, that the people end up just being, you know, morally empty. And, you know, everybody in Florence, because it is a great footballing town, would love to see a great stadium there, financed by a wealthy American who's going to have a real go at it. And, you know, even with that, they still want to be seen as the main man that can, you know, put the thumbs up or the thumbs down in the metaphor at the stadium, at the Coliseum, and say, yeah, it's going, it's not going. And you know, this is an interesting time for Italian football because, you know, you've got CVC coming in. You can argue about, you know, the type of deal they've done, whether it's a good one or a bad one. You know, they're already talking about doing their own channel because, as I suspected, I don't think they're going to get an awful lot of bids for the TV rights. There's not that much competition to Sky. And then at the same time, you've got all these Americans coming in. You know, the latest one, you know, Kyle Kraus, you know, big businessman, you know, quits, I'm reading here from the FT, quits petrol stations for glory at Italian football club Parma. He's going to step back from his Midwest chain, Come and Go, to focus on his Series A acquisition. You know, that's what's happening on the ground in France with the Jerry Cardinales of the world, America with Bologna, an American owner, Parma, Milan, Roma, new ones. And I just see this whole wonderful, high-powered environment of business still in the hands of little guys that I've seen so many of at local councils' offices saying, yes, but I don't think so today.
Yeah. Well, we'll see. Roger, I still live in hope that somehow there's a merger between Parma and West Ham. I can't think what they would call the team, but I live in hope that that day arrives. Well, listen, my friend, we've once again reached the end of another hour of...
most enjoyable.
Yes, absolutely right. Absolutely right.
Forgive the tears at the start for Diego.
Yeah, yeah, there you go. R.I.P. Diego, even though you scored the hand of God goal, you scored the other one, and I, for one, had no problem forgiving you for that. All that remains, I guess, is to thank you, our audience, for listening. We appreciate every one of you. And if you do have a second and wouldn't mind taking that second to rate and review us on iTunes, share the podcast with your friends, that would be wonderful. You can find us on Twitter. If you haven't found us already, you'll find us at EntertainedR. That's the word, A-R-E. You'll find me on Twitter at TTMYGH.
And you'll find myself at RPM Como. As in the lake.
As in the very snowy lake. But Rog, don't fall over and hurt your hip.
I won't.
See you next week. Bye, mate.
Take care. Bye-bye.